Well, do you believe in miracles? Scott Simon does. Of course he does. He's a long-suffering Cubs fan. He has to believe in miracles. Seriously, folks.
The possibility of miracles. It hasn't quite happened yet.
I'm talking about adoption, though. Scott and his wife, Carolyn, are the proud parents of two adopted daughters. And he's got a book out about the process, and it's funny, it's touching. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry, about adopting Elise and Lena. And also the larger issue of adoption. He talks to some other people, being a journalist and all. The book is called Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other, in Praise of Adoption. It's out from Random House. It's brand new, hot off the presses, as they say. Yeah. And he's going to be touring around. We'll tell you about where you can see him as well. And it's great to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good to be here, Miles.
All right. So I was starting this off when you talk about the effort that so many couples go through to have a biological child.
My wife and I tried until we were black and blue.
Which is
not as much fun as it sounds.
It certainly should be more fun than that.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
But you talk about feeling useless and worthless through this whole process. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh, what a way to begin. Well, I do have a section which is in a sense mostly for grins about going through the assisted fertility industry.
Oh, I did grin. Yes, and, when you thought about England when you had
I lay back and think of England, and that seemed to do the trick. I think I said I came, I saw, I conquered, or perhaps that's the reverse.
Yeah,
but you feel you want to start a family, and you feel that almost some cellular level you are you're failing the person you love most in the world, and there's some real grieving that goes on if you had planned on starting a family and it just doesn't work. And it was after a couple of rounds of that, my wife and I just looked over this field of figures. We'd both been around a bit and realized that there are literally millions of children in the world and in this country that don't have homes and crave and need and love and want a loving family. And we were in a position to be that family, and we certainly needed their love.
Was it hard to go from this, desire to have this baby that looks like some combination of you, the biological thing,
We wanted a baby that looked like my wife. And my own genetic contribution, by design, would always be minimal, certainly.
Folks, he has a face for radio. There's no question.
So it was, I can't say we were hung up on that in any way. I think the transition was pretty quick. In fact, before we got married, and our courtship we had lasted about a week, and it was here in Lower Manhattan. We had actually
whirlwind
romance. We'd actually talked about adopting, mm-hmm. but we thought it was the kind of thing that we would have a child or two in the traditional Abraham and Sarah beget manner, and then adopt. And we just wound up moving up the schedule.
No traditional biblical kind of thing going on there. And so, all right, mm-hmm. so that leads you. I guess I'm sure you talk about some of the questions that people ask you. Well, why didn't you get a baby from America? That kind of thing.
Well,
tell us about the process that it took you from okay. This artificial insemination thing is going to work. We're going to adopt China. There must have been one more step in the middle there.
Well, most domestic – I'd go to the back of the line because I was already over 40. I want it understood my wife isn't yet, even as we speak. But we would have put it at the back of the line and also –
Just because we're old, huh?
Just because we're old. And even then, if maybe through the foster care system, we might have gotten an older child. But my wife and I hadn't been parents, and so we didn't feel that we were prepared to begin with an 8 or a 9-year-old. And then we took a look at international programs, and for a lot of reasons which aren't attractive at all, China just at that point had a very reliable workman-like program. And I must say there was also, with the advantage of the hindsight of writing a book, because we had she lived on Mott Street then here in Lower Manhattan, because we had kind of fallen in love in Chinatown, there just seemed to be, you look for signals, and that seemed to be one.
That seemed to be the one. So you kind of refer to it. It's almost like it is a bit of a machine over there. Is there something that's
it's less of a machine now. It probably is still a machine. It's just a slower moving machine because the wait now, I'm told, is 4, 5, and 6 years. At the time my wife and I applied, it was 9 months, which sounded fine. It turned out to be 18 months for our first child and 2 years for our second. They just have perhaps 15 million orphaned and abandoned children. There are a lot of children in that system. And just a mere scintilla of them were made available for adoption.
Well, so if your two daughters had not had the good fortune to be a part of your household And we assume that is good fortune.
I hope it is for them. I know it is for us.
Yes,
yeah.
Certainly. Where would they be? I mean, that's a terrible tragedy that is
unfolding. I go into that in the book, and it's just I'm sorry, it's hard for me to think about that. And I want it understood. We didn't adopt them from China because we wanted to rescue two little girls from the life that they would have had if they'd grown up in an orphanage and, you know, by the age of 11 or 12 would have been put into farm or factory work. We didn't set out to do something good. But you certainly, when you adopt from any place, you should become familiar with that. And, you know, I don't want our little girls to grow up with any feeling of gratitude or obligation. Firstly, they are spoiled rotten, and I can say that as the spoiler in chief, but, you know, by any reasonable definition. And it's just not healthy for them to grow up feeling gratitude. They've got to rebel. They've got to tell us we're wrong. At one point, they've got to say to us, why did you take us out of the world's fastest growing economy and bring us to this industrial backwater? But I do hope they become the kind of young women who when you know, right now their version of the unfairness of life is I didn't get sprinkles in my cocoa. But at one point, I want them to realize on their own that there were youngsters on either side of them in their orphanages that are having significantly different lives, and that's the unfairness of life.
You will undoubtedly get those questions.
Well, we've gotten a couple of them already.
Well,
the ones now right now are – well, the two are, why did my mother give me up, which is rough to handle because you can – You can explain that, and you can say your mother loved you. Your mother took care to make certain that you were at a place where you could be found. She had you wrapped so that you were warm. And still, that's hard for a child to get hold of. And then our oldest daughter, Elise, who's 7, is beginning to ask, "How come we're all girls?"
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that. That is part of government policy, essentially.
Yeah, it's government policy that in that society that. You know, favors males. That's what happens being the result. That's why I don't know the exact figures. They don't really keep exact figures. But let's say of the 15 million orphan and abandoned children who were in China, I think it would be a safe guess that 14.5 million of them were young women.
Is that changing at all?
Yes, I think it is. The Chinese themselves realize that they have a literally twisted society at this point where the gender ratio is all out of balance and that's not good for anybody. And they're making increasing exceptions according to income and in some of the rural areas. But, I find that a kind of modest change on a hideous policy. I didn't write the book to campaign against this. As you know, we tell 12 stories in here of all kinds of different adoptions, domestic, international, from the vantage point of someone like Jeff Seller, the Broadway producer who grew up as an adopted child, and he and his partner have adopted a couple of children. Steve Levitt, the Freakonomics professor at the University of Chicago, they adopted two little girls from China, as my wife and I had, but certainly different circumstances in their family. But all of that being said, I think since we did adopt two little girls from China, my wife and I feel that we are obliged to pay attention to those things.
I'm talking with Scott Simon, who is the host of NPR's Weekend Edition, and his book is Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other, In Praise of Adoption, about adopting two lovely girls from China, Elise and Lena. And how old are they now?
Elise is 7, and Lena's going to be 4 on November 2nd.
And how have you
She's registered at Crate and Barrel, if anyone's interested. I just thought I'd throw that in. Yeah.
Just in case, anybody's interested. How has it been being a parent for you? Do you find yourself – I know as a parent of my kids, as I was growing up, there were probably about 10 things I vowed that I would never say to my kids, and I have said every single one of them. Have you done that?
Well, of course. Yeah. My wife and I vowed that we would never be the kind of parents who would refer to each other as mommy and daddy.
Oh, you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That happens. Yeah. You know what I find to take it at the – I guess nowadays we call it the macro level. It's so nice being a parent to enjoy fart jokes all over again. I thought I'd said goodbye to them, and suddenly
you
I have
said goodbye.
I have an audience.
Just give me a new audience
of two little girls who think they're the funniest things that they've ever heard. I know. Look, it's wonderful. It puts new chambers in your heart. They are a lesser interviewer than you, Miles. When I did an interview on this, asked me, how do you write books and get so much done with two young children? And I answered it in terms of getting up at 4 in the morning to do my outside projects and stuff. But the real answer is Children are the greatest motivational tool ever invented, aren't they? They make you want to do something worthwhile.
Well, they keep you focused on a lot of things. And they actually change the way you view your career, I think, in some respects. Now, in your case, you've been to every continent. You've covered everything. You're well known for your coverage of Sarajevo. Has it changed the way you think about accepting assignments and jetting off to dangerous places?
I guess inevitably, but I haven't had to make one of those choices yet. So I can't say I've confronted it. Yeah. But yeah, probably.
Take us back. I want to, because you write so well about that moment when you saw Elise in the hotel room there in China.
Lena, our second little girl?
Maybe it was the second girl, yeah.
When she was brought into our hotel room.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because we were told to be in our room, I believe, at 4 o'clock, and they said that they would bring her and knock on the door. And I turned to my wife and said, what about room service? You know, we'll talk about room service. And it was like at 4:10, we were very nervous, and they knocked on the door, and they brought this little girl in. Now, when you adopt a child, you get a small thumbnail-sized photo. And they brought this little girl in, and they put her on the round table, kind of in the conference area, corporate hotel. And she didn't look like the little girl in the picture. And my wife said, are you sure she's the same one? Now, we weren't hung up about getting one child or another, but we didn't want something where we would fall in love with this child. I mean, it happened immediately from the moment they walked in. And have someone say, oh, you know, you got the Shmulevitz's kid. They're in the next wing. Let's switch babies. We just didn't want that to happen an hour later. And my wife said, are you sure she's the right one? And Elise, who was then 4 years old, just reached out her hand with a tenderness that I had never seen her display before and took hold of Lena's hand and said, it doesn't matter.
Wow.
And that's also why you have children. They remind you what's really important. It doesn't matter. She was absolutely right. And the thought, it's the greatest moment of my life, the thought that this young girl who had herself been given up in life, in that moment just instinctively, from her own experience, I think, reached out with that kind of tenderness. Kindness is just mind-boggling.
That is mind-boggling.
Now, I must say, since then, she's bopped around the head many times. And
but there's a moment. That's a moment.
In that moment when she knew that she needed her, she was there.
Wow.
As she still is in moments.
And do you think, at age four, how much did she understand about her own origins and what was going on?
I think more about her own origins than I think four-year-olds who were probably born in the traditional method. And we were back in China too, so we had certainly talked to her about that, and she had, at that point we'd already seen her orphanage.
Well, let's talk about, talking about the background. And, it seems like when I was growing up, kids who were adopted were sort of, not told anything about their background. Obviously, in the case
not possible when you
in this case, there's a certain amount of prima facie proof.
Although
something else,
you would be amazed, Miles, how many people will come up to my wife and I and say, "Oh, your children are so beautiful. You know, they could almost be Chinese."
Almost. So, how do you handle the cultural connections and any cultural disconnect they might face? Do you just go to dim sum and call it a day, or is there more to it than that?
they actually prefer Mexican at this point. They had been going to a Chinese cultural class where they learned the carrot harvest song. And Elise, our 7-year-old, speaks. I'm told her Mandarin vocabulary is pretty good. The only word of Mandarin that she has consented to utter at home is pigu, which some of your listeners may know is Mandarin for derriere, and is a very useful word.
Of
we
course.
Use it all the time. I think they will go back and forth on that. At the moment, they are not passionately interested in China. I think they might. They are passionately interested in a lot of different things like music and dancing and and horses and sports for that matter. And, that door is open. On the other hand, as I keep saying, we've adopted two real little girls. They're not cultural vessels. We're not looking to make their lives to represent anything. We're just hoping to give them happy lives.
Well, you mentioned Mandarin. Is it important, you think, that they learn the language? I mean, there could be a lot of other reasons to learn the language.
Yeah, I think it's probably more Americans anyway could learn Mandarin.
Right.
But my wife is French, so their French is exquisite. And that was important so that they can communicate with half of the family without a translator getting involved. The Mandarin is there, and honestly, for the moment, they don't seem to be particularly enthralled by it. Mm-hmm. But it'll be there as an opportunity. You know, and it is when we were getting ready to go over and meet and bring back home Elise, I'll never forget standing in line behind a Chinese-American family from Kansas at O'Hare. And they were seeing their young son offer his junior year abroad. And my wife said, oh, where are you going in China for your junior year abroad? And the young man said, actually, I'm a religious studies major. I'm going to Kenya. So they, you know, we had, I'm afraid, racially profiled
this young man. You were making some assumptions there, weren't you?
Exactly. And I shrink to think of that now. And, you know, our little girls are going to be able to steer their own course in life.
So do you, in a way, in me asking the question, is that, I'm sort of coloring this via race by asking the question. I guess we all do this, whether we know it or not,
yeah,
right?
I guess people, yeah. You know, and look, there are, and I think there are some parents to whom it's more important than it is to my wife and I. It's important for my wife and I to provide those opportunities to them. But I don't think we're going to try and shoehorn them into anything. And I think, by the way, any parents, look, you can take the kid to Mandarin class, but you can't make him drink of the Mandarin vocabulary. And I think any parents who think that somehow, oh, my child is going to do this or do that, probably aren't thinking through what it really is to be a parent. Your children pretty early in life begin to make their own choices.
Well, there's no manual that really comes with this.
Yeah.
And that's what you sort of make it up as you go along. Are you a tough parent?
No.
you're the softy, aren't you? I can tell. You are. Carolyn's the enforcer?
My wife says that she doesn't know how our little girls learned the English word no, because they would have had to have picked that up from me. I damn internet, I think that's where they learned it. I'm pretty much a softy, yes.
Yeah.
And then when I have my moments where I try and be the enforcer and lay down
no
the
credibility.
Law,
no,
they think it's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm totally with you on that. That's the way it works in our household. As I don't want to dwell on this whole racial thing, but you've written about this. You wrote a great book on Jackie Robinson and breaking racial barriers. Do you think that this in any way affects the way people look at your family, or will the girls somehow feel like outsiders?
I think our girls are growing up in a significantly different United States. And it's not.
I hope so.
It's not just in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles anymore. I mean, I travel around the country a lot. You go to small towns in Mississippi and North Carolina. There are Indian families. There are Salvadoran families. Certainly African American families. I think the diversity of America is all over now. So I don't think any of our children are growing up in, you know, what people think of as a kind of a majority white Anglo culture anymore, as far as that goes. I think they're growing up in an atmosphere of diversity. I grew up in a time when my Irish mother and Spanish Jewish father were considered a mixed marriage. It was very important to them, and it was to our family, that we were proudly a mixture. You know, to us, that was the story. And I think probably our little girls are going to grow up being aware of the fact that they're a mixture. But, that doesn't make them so distinctive anymore. It's hard for me. There are 200 youngsters in Elise's grammar school, and I think almost every family has some kind of mixture in there.
You really are the melting pot when you put this all together, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, you know, we love when we're in France where this is less common. And we'll draw stairs. Firstly, because my wife, as you may know, is arguably the most beautiful woman in the world. And of course, what is such a hideous man doing married to such a beautiful woman? I'm sure that's why we draw stairs. But
caught her in a weak moment.
She thought they asked her if she wanted another dollop of creme fraiche. And she said, oh, I do. We were married in Connecticut. It's amazing what you can do there. But in any event, we sometimes get stares. I mean, nice but curious stares. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes look at them and, you know, in a very nice way say to people, yep, you're looking at a typical American family here.
Yeah, and you say that with pride, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, how do you funnel all those cultures into how you raise them when you make decisions on religion, everything else?
You know, children are so many things before they're any ethnicity, and for that matter, parents are too. So, I can't say I'm aware of a Jewish or a Catholic or a Chinese way to make most of these things. You know, you get up in the morning, your children are hungry, sometimes they're cold, often they're tired, often they're cranky. Days will go by before I think about anything having to do with ethnicity.
Yeah. Now, you didn't just tell your story, being a journalist and all.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to be a traditional journalist in enlisting interest. Interesting other people like Frank DeFord or Steve Inskeep or Steve Levitt, other people I've mentioned. My wife and I have been parents for 6+ years. So we understand we're still in the rapture stage. You know, there's a lot to learn from people like Jeff Seller, you know, who grew up as an adopted child. Frank DeFord, whose daughter Scarlett now, I hope she doesn't mind me saying, is now in her late 20s. We were aware of the fact that there was a lot to learn, and we welcomed the chance to talk to these people about what they had learned, how adoption had touched them and what it meant to them.
So it really was a personal journey for you, just fact-finding, if nothing else.
You know, it was wonderful, yeah. And it was, I don't want to mention names, but there was a young man who came out to see me before they took me into your studio, who works on the production staff here, who told me he's adopted. There are people that my wife and I had known for some time who had never really mentioned the fact, oh, yeah, they said, you're adopting. You know, it's interesting, I'm adopted. Or it's interesting, that child you've known for 6 years, he or she's adopted. So we talked to families who we kind of met in the ordinary course of things because we could ask them to open their lives a bit and, you know, and went to school in a way I think we wouldn't have been able to otherwise. I hope that makes it a more valid book, too, because it's a series of love stories, isn't it? It's about how we meet and fall in love and form families together.
It makes me want to go adopt. It really does.
Well, you can, you know.
There are babies out there.
And it's just you don't have to wait until the assisted fertility industry just, you know, comes up all lemons. it's also possible for families to have a child or two or more in the traditional manner. And many families decide then, you know, we'd like to add to our family by adopting.
Yeah, I've got a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old at home, and I'm thinking, gosh, what are we going to do when they're gone? You know, maybe we should just do that.
I have Jack and Pat Kiernan in the book, who live in old friends from Chicago. They happen to live in Dallas now. They have, at the moment, 5 youngsters, and that's exactly what they've done.
It changes the marriage quite a bit, though, doesn't it? It's amazing how they become the center of your life.
They instantly become the center of your life. It changes your marriage, but you know it also brings it to the next level, doesn't it?
Right. It could also suck it dry if you don't watch it, right? You got to be careful.
My wife and I just had our 10th anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much, September 3rd. And what can I say? I love her more than I did the day we met. People will point out since we were married a week after we met, I would have to love her more. But
you really are a romantic, aren't you?
I guess I am. But, you know, as we say in Chicago, 10 years ain't beanbag. And I think that, you know, we've been through 10 years. Look, I remember, you know, we've just been through the anniversary of September 11th. That happened just right after our first anniversary. And those were inescapably grim days that challenged everything that that our lives were at that particular point. And we went through, well, I won't go through what we've been through, except we come out, I know from my point of view, my conviction, loving my wife more than ever. On her anniversary, she said the same thing to me, but, you know, we'll allow for some romantic overstatement on our anniversary. Maybe she'll revise it now.
I hope she's listening. If not, we'll give her a link to the podcast.
I believe she'll be listening.
You're going to get major brownie points for this. Let me ask you a parenting dilemma here, just thinking about it. If Elise or Lena in the distant future came home and said,
would they say, I just met the guy?
I just met a guy a week ago. We're getting married.
Absolutely not. No. But Miles, you know, we were just in Europe over the summer, and we'd get off in these small villages, and I would look for the crosses on top of buildings, and I would say to my wife, hold on, darling, that must be a nunnery. I'm going to go over there and fill out an application form. I found a nunnery in Greenland that is encircled by a moat and has no internet connection. And all of these posits are very interesting, but they're hypothetical. They'll be in the nunnery.
Chastity belts are a good thing, aren't they? All right. I wish we could talk longer. Scott Simon. Of course, you know him, the host of NPR's Weekend Edition. The book is Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other.
Can I mention it'll be at, I think, 82nd and Broadway?
Yes, of course. Plug away. Go.
82nd and Broadway, Barnes & Noble.
That's Barnes & Noble. It's in my hood. I'll be there.
Yeah, please,
I'll be waiting in line. You're going to do a reading there and everything?
I'm going to do a reading and tomorrow night in Connecticut.
Excellent.
Near the scene of the crime, which is to say our marriage.
Well, good luck with the book and good luck with everything else and good luck with the girls. That's the most important thing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Nice to
Scott Simon.